You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
James Harden stayed red hot with 36 points and 10 assists on a laser efficient 12 of 19 shooting in just 29 minutes. Eric Gordon remained on fire from behind the three-point arc, making 5 of his looks from deep. Daniel House Jr. and Kenneth Faried combined for 31 points off the bench. And the Rockets not only won in Sacramento on Tuesday night, they won going away, a 130-105 beatdown of a game Kings squad that had actually won in San Antonio on the road against a Western Conference playoff team just 2 days earlier. So with that as the backdrop, welcome in to a special mini-cast episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Wednesday morning, April 3rd, I'm calling it a mini-cast episode because we're only going to have 2 segments today. That's because the Rockets are already in Los Angeles getting ready for a massive game tonight. Rockets-Clippers could be a round one playoff preview. And with the win the Rockets posted Tuesday night in Sacramento, again, it's their 17th in 20 games. It improves them to 50-28 on the year. It effectively puts them in full control of their own destiny for a top 3 seed in the Western Conference. So that game is massive. It's going to be difficult, night 2 of a road back-to-back, but at least the potential is there for the Rockets not only to get a top 3 seed, which would be inevitable at this point, but even a top 2, perhaps, if they went out and there are only 4 games left to play. So today's show, we're only doing a couple of segments because whatever happens over the next, I would say what, we're about 12 hours away from tip-off, certainly that's going to be a bigger storyline, and then we'll come back with a full show tomorrow on Thursday to break down both sides of this California back-to-back and, of course, whatever happens in this Rockets-Clippers game from Staples Center tonight, a potential round one preview with the Rockets currently in the 3 spot in the Western Conference and the Clippers in the 6. So today's show on Wednesday, we're going to look at the 25-point blowout of the Kings through a couple of different lenses. We will get to the individuals. We talked about Harden, Gordon, House, and Faried off the top. But in segment 1, I'm going to lead with the standings impact because that's where, to me, this is really interesting. As mentioned, the Rockets, they improved to 50-28. But the more interesting development of the night, aside from the Rockets just taking care of business themselves, was the fact that the Nuggets did lose in Golden State, which puts them within 2 games of the Rockets in the loss column, Denver at 26, Houston and Portland at 28, as far as catching the Nuggets for a top 3 seed. And that's very interesting for a couple of reasons. First off, if it's a 3-way tie between Denver, Portland, and Houston, Houston would win that, even though they would lose a 2-way tie to the Blazers because of the head-to-head. In a 3-way tie, the first culling essentially occurs based on the division winner line, which Houston and Denver would be, because Denver would have the division tiebreaker over Portland. Then Houston's head-to-head advantage would be applied versus Denver. So that would be Houston at 2, Denver at 3, Portland at 4. So not just getting on the other side of the bracket from the Golden State Warriors and playing Denver in round 2, it's incredibly possible that the Rockets could play Denver in round 2 and have home court advantage, because you consider that Denver's schedule is fairly difficult, even with the Warriors game now in their rearview mirror, their next 4 games, the Spurs, the Blazers again, and then the Jazz. That's a pretty tough stretch, all against Western Conference playoff teams. 2 are on the road, so it's incredibly possible, if not likely, that they lose at least 2 of those games. And who knows, maybe they lose 3, and if that's the case, the Rockets have a buffer and they're able to drop one. It's not as if Houston has an easy closing slate. They're at LA tonight against the Clippers, home for New York and Phoenix, and then they close at Oklahoma City. So of Houston's final 4, 2 are on the road against Western Conference playoff teams. So it's not going to be easy for the Rockets to win out. That said, when you consider that this Rockets team in their current 17-3 run, that's playing in an 850 winning clip, effectively since the Scott Foster debacle on the other side of the All-Star break, Houston has been top five on offense, top five on defense. They're not just beating teams, they are bludgeoning teams as they did on Tuesday night in Sacramento. Yeah, even as the schedule stiffens and you're playing on the road against playoff teams, a squad like this healthy Houston Rockets team at the moment is perfectly capable of winning those games. So I do think the door, we said earlier in the week that when Denver lost to the Wizards, that cracked it ajar as sort of the number two seed. It's more than ajar now. It is pretty open. The Rockets just need to continue winning games. And if they do, if the Rockets win out and there's only four games left, I think it's more likely than not at this point that they get the number two seed. At a bare minimum, though, what we can say with confidence is that they control their own destiny for a top three seed because of that Denver loss. The reason that that is so impactful is that with Houston at 28 losses, Portland also at 28, at the moment, while Houston is the number three, that's only because they played one more game than Portland. As long as they stay at 28 losses, Portland would have the tiebreaker because they have won two of the three head-to-head meetings with Houston this season. The reason Houston is now in control of its own destiny as we speak before the Clipper game is because two of the Nuggets games coming up are against the Blazers. So the only way, if Houston wins out, that they would not pass Portland in the standings is if Portland also wins out because they're tied in the loss column. Well, Portland winning out inherently involves two Denver losses. So that would drop Denver into a tie with Houston. So at this point, this Rockets squad that started 11-14 and after 25 games, not an insignificant sample, was second to last in the entire Western Conference. Yeah, they now have full control of their destiny for a top three seed with only four games left to play. What an amazing turnaround. And assuming they don't stub their toe against the Knicks or the Suns, I would say that they have also clinched, at this point, a top four seed and home court in the first round, no matter what happens over these final four games, assuming they take care of business at home against the tanking Knicks and Suns. Because the team that's closest to the Rockets, Houston at 28 losses, then you have the Jazz currently in the five spot with 30, and they've been taking advantage of a weak schedule. It does get more difficult in the final 2 days when they have Denver and then at the Clippers, night two of a back-to-back. So the odds are against the Jazz winning out, but I do think they're at least in favor of the Jazz being at 30 losses until the season's last 2 days, which could stress you out. The thing is, since you got that Sacramento win, even if you lose against the Clippers tonight on night two of the road back-to-back, as long as you win, and these are games the Rockets will be favored by double digits in against the Knicks and Suns at home, the Jazz will effectively, it isn't even the right word to use, they would be eliminated as far as a top four seed, at least passing the Rockets. Now, who knows what happens with the Nuggets and the Blazers, so I can't say they'd be eliminated overall. But there would be no mathematical path for the Jazz to pass the Rockets as long as Houston wins those two easy home games, should be layups, against the Knicks and the Suns. Because Houston would have the tiebreaker on Utah. They split the season series, but Houston is division winner. Utah is not. So Houston, as long as they don't stub their toe, there is no way for the Jazz to pass them. All they can do, assuming the Rockets get to 52 wins, which means at worst 30 losses, all the Jazz can do is tie. And that's even if they win out, which is unlikely, but let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Even if that happens, they still cannot pass the Rockets in the standings. So at this point, unless the Rockets stub their toe, and again, this is a Houston squad that's top five on both ends of the floor and has been healthy since the All-Star break, Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, James Harden, Clint Capella, all out there, it's hard to see the Rockets doing that. So as we close out segment one, I think the key thing to celebrate is how far this team has come. Even if you're uber conservative and say, well, the Rockets, they have road games at LA, at OKC. These are Western Conference playoff teams, and you could easily lose one or both of those games. Yeah, you could. But you've already effectively clinched, unless you have a disastrous loss, a top four seed in home court in round one. And this is a Houston squad that 25 games in was 11-14. That's an incredible turnaround. Wednesday or Tuesday in Sacramento, it clinched their 50th win of the season. Now with only four games left to play, they're in full control of their own destiny for a top three seed. That's an amazing, amazing turnaround. Kudos to Mike D'Antoni, James Harden, Daryl Morey, the leadership of the team, the organization. What an incredible turnaround, and more than any individual. We'll get to them momentarily in segment two. I think this is a day to celebrate what was for the organization as a whole, because this could have gotten out of control. I remember all the talk early in the year comparing it to the 2015-2016 season, also coming off a Western Conference Finals loss to the Warriors and ended up finishing 41-41, could never figure it out. This team has figured it out. They now have 17 wins in their last 20 basketball games. They've gotten to 50 wins even in a loaded Western Conference, and they've effectively locked up home court advantage in round one of the playoffs, and they are in full control of their own destiny for a top three seed. And who knows, even a top two seed is becoming increasingly viable as well. How sweet it is. And remember, to get this show each and every day, subscribe to Locked On Rockets on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and their new features each and every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Rockets. Now, as we wrap up Wednesday's mini-cast, we're not doing our usual three-point show because there's somewhat limited shelf life with this one. The Rockets back at it again tonight in LA against the Clippers at Staples Center. Potential round one playoff preview. If the season ended today, it would be Houston in the three spot, the Clippers in the sixth spot. So whatever happens, the standings impact, of course, tracking the individuals, James Harden trying to make his MVP push. We're going to learn a lot more tonight than we did last night. Largely, the Rockets, even winning by 25 against the Kings, Sacramento, they're 38-40. They're a nice story, but they're out of the Western Conference playoff picture. It's a game in which the Rockets were expected to win. They needed to take care of business. And unlike the San Antonio Spurs, another potential playoff opponent, who lost to the Kings on Sunday at home, the Rockets went into Sacramento. And even against a game Kings squad with a lot of young talent, De'Aaron Fox, Buddy Hield, Marvin Bagley, Willie Cauley-Stein, they did do what they needed to by getting the 130-105 win. So here in segment two, we're going to discuss the individuals that helped make that happen and the key storylines. As far as the standings impact, that's what we covered in segment one. So you look at who flashed for the Rockets. Obviously, James Harden, 36 points, 10 assists, a game after his 50-point triple-double against the same Kings. This was a home-and-home Saturday in Houston, Tuesday in Sacramento. Shot 12 of 19 from the field, plus 29, which by far led the Rockets. Most impressive part, other than, of course, that he made shots, he rebounded from shooting 7 of 23 from behind the three-point arc on Saturday to a much more efficient 7 of 12 on Tuesday night in Sacramento when he and the team were a lot more rested because they'd had two full days off. The other big takeaway is that he did not even have to play 30 minutes. In fact, no one on the entire Rockets roster did. So when you're facing a road back-to-back, the biggest thing you can do is take care of business on the front end so that no one is overextended. The Rockets, that's why you go out and you build leads. They were up by 16 at the half. So you could take your foot off the gas in the fourth quarter. Now, it didn't show in the standings or in the box score, excuse me, because 39-25 is actually the Rockets' highest scoring quarter of the game. So kudos to the guys who did play the end of the bench. And this was a game in which certainly Houston's bench, after scoring just 3 points on Saturday, that closer than expected 119-108 win, you had 31 points just from Daniel House Jr. and Kenneth Faried. We'll talk about them momentarily. Rockets also had a couple of threes each from Austin Rivers and Iman Shumpert. So the bench overall much more impactful, and that's what gave you the 39 points in the fourth quarter. But the main theme is that none of the regulars had to get overextended. That's why the bench guys had an opportunity to get extended run. Even Chris Chioza got some minutes at the tail end of this game. And of course, that's always a good sign because it tells you that your starters took care of business. And now on a road back-to-back, that's especially important. After James Harden, who had 36 and 10, also in addition to having 10 assists, he only had 2 turnovers. Second straight game in which Houston was laser efficient as a team, just 7 combined turnovers. So we've talked about their defensive resurgence, getting top 5 in the league since the All-Star break on that end. Well, they've also been more efficient with the basketball. And so when you see James Harden having 10 assists to only 2 turnovers, that's been a bugaboo of his throughout his career. A minor one because he's fantastic. He's the best basketball player in the world by a long shot, in my opinion. But when he's able to do that on 63% shooting and only 2 turnovers, those are just mind-blowing numbers. A guy who's been close to mind-blowing, at least when you consider relative to his first 4 or 5 months of this 2018-2019 season, is Eric Gordon. He had 19 points. Most importantly, though, 5 of 10 from the field, that's 50, or from 3, that's 50%. Coming off a March in which he shot 45% plus from behind the arc, and the Rockets went 12-2 in the 14 games that Eric played. We've said he's the variable. The Rockets go from good to great when Eric Gordon is on. The only question is, would that continue into April? And in his first April game, he actually was a little bit better than that. Again, 5 of 10 from behind the arc, 6 of 12 overall, 19 points. Eric Gordon, he is still in rhythm. I think for Eric, a lot of it has to do with health and over the final four games. We always talk about that with Chris Paul, who had 12 assists. By the way, Houston now improves to 31-1 over two seasons when Chris Paul has double-figure assists. That one loss was without James Harden, so they still have not lost in two regular seasons or the postseason when James Harden plays and Chris Paul has double-digit assists. Overall, though, with Chris, with Eric, our show on Tuesday, and if you haven't heard that, I strongly encourage you to check it out at our archives with Craig Ackerman, the voice of the Rockets, lead broadcaster, play-by-play on TV and radio. He said with Chris, he's not that worried about the shooting, and after Chris put in 22, shot 50% from the field Saturday, he regressed a little bit on Tuesday, 3 of 12 from the field. Didn't matter because he had the 12 assists, and of course that partially reflects the fact that his teammates actually made the open shots. And above all else, what Craig said the priority is for the Rockets and Chris, it's for him to be healthy, and I think the same goes with Eric Gordon, who has had a myriad of issues with his knees this year. He finally seems healthy, and if Eric Gordon and Chris Paul are right heading into the playoffs, and if Eric Gordon is thus making more of his shots, that's when the Rockets go from good to lethal. So I think that's a really encouraging sign. And also with Chris, the 12 assists, to get back to him, even though he didn't shoot well, 12 assists to just two turnovers, he led that second unit. And the other big storyline for the Rockets collectively was the resurgence of their bench after scoring just three on Saturday against the Kings. They had 48 tonight, including 31 just from Kenneth Fareed and Daniel House Jr. So Fareed, 21 minutes, 12 points, 11 rebounds. It was actually just his sixth game since the end of February. There were a couple of games in which he was active and able to play, but the Rockets, for rotation reasons, opted not to play him. They thought Nene was a better matchup. By and large, though, he's been hurt. First, it was an adductor strain. Now, it's been a sore knee. So to see him come back with only five games left, now four until the playoffs, and post a double-double, it's encouraging. Now, the Kings, they're a good matchup for Fareed. They're not especially seasoned frontline. Marvin Bagley, Willie Cauley-Stein. So it's a good matchup for Kings or for Fareed's athleticism against the Kings and their athletic, active young bigs. I would not say that I'm confident in how that's going to translate to a much more, say, disciplined Jazz, Spurs, Thunder-type team in round one. That said, for Fareed, I think step one is just seeing him get on the court, be happy and healthy, and they'll worry about the matchups later. The other guy who flashed, as mentioned, Daniel House, made four threes, 7 of 14 overall. And, of course, a lot of the bench, House had four threes. Rivers and Shumpert each had two, so that's eight made threes between them. With Chris Paul leading that second unit, he's done a much better job of playing to their strengths and pushing the pace. They're going to get open looks, and Chris Paul's assist figures, yeah, he played well, but a lot of them, if he has five or six assists, it doesn't mean that he necessarily played all that much worse. Sometimes his teammates just don't make the open shots. So certainly those 12 assists for Chris, they reflect how well his teammates are shooting the ball and the value of that. That's a big deal. And then when you look at the actual bench guys, the fact that Daniel House finally got going with 19 points and Kenneth Fareed, who, by the way, did have a three of his own in this game, to me, the 31 points between Fareed and House are especially rewarding because I think those are what I would consider your wild cards off the bench. The Rockets, we know they're trying to cull down from 11 rotation players to 9, maybe even only 8, depending on the matchup, by the time the playoffs get here. And that's not just a Mike D'Antoni thing. That's any NBA team. You don't see 10-plus man rotations in the playoffs. It doesn't work that way. And to some degree, they're going to flip-flop based on the matchup. For example, there are going to be some settings where Nene is better than Fareed as your backup five. There are going to be others where Fareed is better. Generally speaking, though, the five Rocket starters, Tucker, Capella, Chris Paul, James Harden, Eric Gordon, they're set. And then you have six potential rotation pieces off the bench. Fareed, House, Rivers, Shumpert, Nene, and Gerald Green. So I think we can agree that, you know, you can get down to 10 because Nene and Fareed, you're probably only going to play one of them. I think Fareed is the four of that matchup. It's probably, unless they really need something different, not going to happen just because it's been so long since the Rockets have tried Fareed at the four. I wouldn't rule it out. I just think it's doubtful at this point, especially now that you have Daniel House Jr. back. But as far as comparing those bench players to one another, I think you have three in there that are generally considered steady hands, those being Nene, Rivers, and Shumpert. And what I mean by that is their primary value is their presence, their defense, their stability. Now, it helps if they make open threes. For example, Rivers and Shumpert each had 2 4-of-9 combined on Tuesday in Sacramento. That's great. But by and large, you're depending on them for defense, for a presence, and not necessarily counting stats, points, rebounds, those types of things. With the other three, Gerald Green, who's still out with the adductor, and then Daniel House Jr. and Kenneth Faried, they're wild cards. I don't know if they're as stable defensively as Rivers, Shumpert, or as proven a commodity as Nene is. Now, House can be a good defensive player. Gerald Green and Nene, or Gerald Green and Kenneth Faried, excuse me, not so much. What you are looking at those three for, House, Faried, and Green, and they don't all play the same spots, but these are guys that effectively can be microwaves. They can heat up in a very short period of time. That, to me, is their appeal. We've seen House be up and down. The San Antonio game a couple of weeks ago was not very good. He wasn't all that effective against Denver or the front end of the Sacramento game. Flip side is in between New Orleans and Milwaukee on the road last week. He was fantastic. He's hit or miss. Some of it depends on how he's feeling with his jump shot. And it's good to see, with only 4 games left in the regular season, that he had a positive game from that standpoint. Gerald Green is like that on steroids. We know that Gerald, if he has a stretch where he makes 3, 4 3-pointers, he can do it in 2 or 3 minutes and really lift your team. Flip side is that if they aren't going in, then he can shoot you out of a game. So some of what happens in the playoffs, it can be giving quicker hooks to these guys. And then Kenneth Faried, even though he's not really a 3-point shooter, although he did make one against the Kings, to some degree, what he gives you offensively, you're going to see very quickly if it offsets his liabilities on the defensive end. He's not going to magically become a good defensive player. It's just you hope that he makes enough shots. He provides an element of vertical spacing. He gets out in transition. He runs the floor. He's also a good rebounder for a Houston squad that, you know, that's kind of been their bugaboo all season long. With 11 from Faried on Tuesday, they only lost the rebounding edge by 8 last night. Question is, can he get enough points and rebounds to offset his weaknesses as a man defender? So to me, as you go into the playoffs, Rivers, Shumpert, Nene, those guys, of course you want them to make shots, but even if they don't, you still feel confident that they're going to give you what you are counting on from them. With House, Green, and Faried, a lot of it does come down to the counting stats and whether they put enough balls in the bucket, or in the case of Faried, also grab enough balls as far as the rebounding battle to offset their weaknesses in other areas. So to me, the biggest thing with those guys, of course, they're your wild cards. You can play them if you're in a tough spot and you need, say, a shot of energy or something to kind of turn a game around. They're more variables, I would say, a lesser version of what Eric Gordon means for the starting lineup. The biggest thing, though, heading down the home stretch of the year, you just want to see some of those guys get some continuity, start to feel better about their jump shots. I thought that's what happened with Daniel House and, to a lesser extent, Faried. Those two guys combined for 31 points on Tuesday in Sacramento. Hopefully, Gerald Green will also get one of those games down the stretch. He's missed the last week plus with an adductor strain. Hopefully, he'll get a game or two back before the playoffs and be feeling good about his jumper heading into the postseason as well. So to me, when we're evaluating the end of the bench rotation spots, it's trying to balance the steady hand versus the wild card and what you need in a given game. And that's why it may not be that they just have a set 8 or 9 man rotation that these are our guys going into the playoffs. No, to some degree, it may depend on the matchup. It may also depend on what you need in a given game. Do you want just the steadying influence, or do you need the potential upside of a House who can get hot and make 4 threes as he did on Tuesday, or Gerald Green, who we know can do many of these same things, or Kenneth Faried, who even with his defensive liabilities, he can put up a double-double in 21 minutes like it's nothing. So it's going to vary from matchup to matchup, and it's also going to vary from game to game, depending on what you need. All you can ask for going down the stretch of the year, first and foremost, is health, and then beyond that, make sure that these guys are feeling pretty good about their jump shots, that they're in rhythm, that they like their usage, how they're playing with Chris Paul. And as far as I can tell, after that 25-point win on Tuesday night, that checked all the boxes for me. So with that, I will wrap up our abbreviated minicast episode of Locked On Rockets. If you want more content before our next show, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. You can also follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. You can go to our website at LockedOnRockets.com. LockedOnRockets.com. And you can also email us, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan. As always, thanks for listening. And please remember that you can subscribe to this show on the new Himalaya podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And when you get in your car, just tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets. Once again, the happy final from Sacramento Tuesday night. Rockets 130, Kings 105. Houston improves to 50-28. It's their 17th win in the last 20 games. They're back at it tonight in Los Angeles against the Clippers. Potential round one playoff preview. The Rockets, by virtue of winning last night, they're now in control of their own destiny for a top three seed in the Western Conference, as astounding as that is. And even the number two seed, with Denver falling to Golden State and coming within two games of Houston in the loss column, that's not out of play either. A lot to look forward to, so please come back soon as we break it all down. Whatever happens against the Clippers, and will the Rockets stay in this advantaged postseason seeding dynamic? Whatever happens, we'll be right back here tomorrow to break it all down at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.